Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This is podcast while driving, and this time I'm going to look at a review of some sort of orbital mechanics, and that's how the Earth orbits the Sun. Quite easy, it goes in circles, doesn't it? Well, no, there's a bit more to it. And the reason I'm doing this is because I'm reading a book called Chasing the Sun by David Cohen, and I'm religiously trying to podcast to get time aside to do a podcast a chapter at a time. And I'll just give you a view so far. It's a 580-page tome, and the preface is a bit of facts and information about the sun. Then it was a random chapter. Before chapter one, there was another chapter stuffed in. It wasn't the preface. It was this, well, I suppose it would be called a prologue, and it was a description of his journey up to Mount Fuji. And so it really showcased his masterful ability to digress and then use the actual natural fibres of the story to bring back the overall story. You'll hear the trafficator and engines, the various things like that going. I tried to get a microphone, and I bought a microphone, and someone sold me a slightly cheaper one. Of course, it was a microphone with an earplug jack. You know, this is fantastic, but of course it's got too many little ridges on it to work in my phone. So you'll hear the car noises, hopefully not me crashing or anything like that. Gives me a reminder to turn on my lights. So after a fiercely hot summer, it's just a week or a couple of days of cool. It's going to get hot again and then settle down to a normal weather that you'd recognise overseas. Now, we're up to chapter number one and two. It does to do with mythology. And getting into it, the first sort of group of mythology is an explanation structure that we use to govern society. So people would start up with an explanation of the sun, what was going on in the sun, i.e. the sun has a personality, it does things for certain reasons, and this explanation will keep on going. At a particular point, you have to really watch it, because at a particular point they say, and the sun came down and gave, married so-and-so, and we are now gods, and that's why we control the thing. So it's a sort of the first chapter was an explanation the sun used as part of an explanation structure in society. A lot of really interesting aspects of it. And that ended along with the... That was mixed up also with the historiography, or the actual ability to make up stories of the sun's mythology, the almost commercialization of sun mythology, and people coming up with different studies. Carl Jung coming across about that people, the sun mythology, the rites were to give societies a sense of purpose. They had to do a sun dance to make the sun go along. Although it's in the next chapter, they had to rip out hearts to relieve little bits of mystical sun which was held in people's hearts to release it back up to them. Got all sorts of really crazy stuff. The second one is to do with the sun. I sort of read another book about men's sense of time and the development of a cyclical calendar that everyone would actually work through, the different personalities, different feasts would have different personalities, different things you'd try to do, different structures, and it would mean it's almost like a program that you'd go through, and the sun's very much involved in this programming. It's slightly different. It's more imbuing values, and this led off to a number of sun ceremonies, including the North American sun dance. I think everyone's heard of a rain dance, but the sun dance, and the idea that the sun went away and then came back up again. This mysticism, what's the sun doing? And the fact that I think certain cultures have stories that the sun comes up, but it's a different sun. We're getting a burning sun, we've got an earthquake sun, we've got a pestilence sun, all these different suns which can come up. And in all of it, we want to take a step back and say, what is this David Cohen doing? And what are some of the bigger factors? Sort of, let's take a step back and actually look at this author. Now, he's a man of independent means, so he's sort of like a gentleman scholar of the old time. So he's got a publishing house, publishing career, lives in New York City, as you do in all the movies, and he's not attached to an academic institute, so he's allowed to go to the library. He's allowed not to really get into solar physics, and that's what I'm going to have to do, is introduce a bit of physics to it. And he's allowed to read all these books, but with no sort of not necessarily someone to give him critical feedback. There's a sort of amount of hand waving, just sort of statements there that the solstices, solstice, equinox, solstice, which is there, he gives you beautiful information that solstice means sol, stasis means stationary sol, like armistice, and equinox equal night, and ecliptic, eclipses, that's ecliptic, plane of the ecliptics where eclipses happen. So there's all that beautiful information, but where it comes to a little bit of physics, that's sort of, there's an explanation given, but it's sort of like a stumbling, sort of circular explanation. For if you actually understand what's going on, you say, what's going on here? And so you realise that there are certain areas of science. Now, he says something which sounds profound, but, it's like, this book is not a rainbow, it has to end somewhere. That's what a beautiful, profound thing. But that's what he says. Why I'm not going to explain the science too deeply of what's going on. I could if I was asked to, but it would take a long time. Well, that's not necessarily so. I just don't think he's encountered people to explain to him what's going on scientifically. Now, staying in looking at him, this means that because he hasn't got the full understanding, he also doesn't have the understanding about how the different degrees of understanding come along. So he will juxtapose a Greek philosopher and a modern scientist next to each other, and both have sort of vastly different outlooks and thinking tools. Like, a modern person has computers and calculus and stuff like that. But because there's not that understanding thread to that dimensionality, it seems to him all two-dimensional. And so when you're reading it, you go, I'm a bit troubled by this. He's putting A and B, and they're 1,000 years apart, and there's a lot of things that have happened between the two things. It's sort of like so-and-so is 100 metres away, and you're both six stories up, but you're in different buildings, and you have to go down and up, and there's a whole lot of complex. Makes it a very difficult story. It's an inconvenient story for it. So this potential is really good. Now, what happens is that this type of investigation is not that dissimilar from an academic. An academic has to do several things. One, they have to write grant applications, they have to produce papers and stuff like that. But the important thing is that when they talk about something, just even a vague thing, they're talking against people who will say, I don't understand. What is the explanation? And I'll just keep on asking till they understand. So there's this academic environment. Typically, you'll give a talk about something that interests you, and either people will be totally bored or uninterested. You might find a student who asks a question, and in general, the idea is it's a question of not, I'm better than you, but look, I'm a student, I'm in the process of understanding. And in that process, other academics who are looking in will take that lack of understanding and act as a steward for it and enlarge it. So if someone says, I don't understand why the Earth speeds up and slows down, what's going on this in our orbit, I really don't understand it. And if David could not explain it, the question is no longer cited with the actual author. It actually lives a bit aside, and it can actually, even though David may not understand the question, people can ask and have a conversation, and then they can get back in. So there's sort of like an ecology of systems. Now, one of the things that I suppose I have learned is that nothing beats deep reading and deep thinking and continuous, in this case, rehabilitation, hitting the road and always improving yourself. That's, I think, the gold standard, to have a go and try and explain things. But although it's quite easy to criticise someone like David Cohen who's going about researching things, it's a fantastic thing. We have, in a new age, previously only extremely fabulously wealthy people like Darwin or Banks were able to live a life like this. Now we're living in an age where our basic solutions are met. Now people can spend their entire leisure time playing golf and stuff like that. We've now got people who are doing their leisure time and doing research. So I think that's a very positive thing, and it's a positive go. It's just the structures going forward. This is a beautifully structured book in terms of that you can say, I wonder if he's covered this topic, and you can go up to the index, and it's been indexed in a traditional way. So it's in the age of websites, this is a great thing, a great collection of things brought together. And I'm going to spend this entire first half talking about this. What I do want to say is that although academia does have the advantage of moving the idea a little bit away from the person originating it, having it as an open question and debated in an academic environment where you've got a whole range of different expertise, different people's understanding. So there's always fresh students coming in who haven't understood, or it's a continuous process, the academic environment. That being said, there are other things in that. Ultimately, at the end of the day, it's pretty hard to know. They have to actually make a buck out of it all. So it's a little bit different from the person who's self-made and has got heaps of money. Just checking. Going around the corner here. Thanks, mate. Okay. So it's a little bit different from the self-made person. There is, and it's, in that sense, it's a little bit impure. So the person may ask a question, but if the student isn't actually paying fees to the university, it's the person from the outside, that person hasn't really understood the system. And very often, there's a selection criteria, a whole lot of processes for that professor to sit there. They have to compete, they have to teach, they've got to do a whole lot of other things. They have to write out selection criteria, and before long, because it's such a complex hall of mirrors, academic mirrors, it turns into a real Game of Thrones. So very rarely, in fact I have never, I think In terms of a real working university or school, I have not seen a university or school, although on paper it can do things and in certain aspects on a good day it can produce great things. Majority, one day a week you can do it, the rest of the days of the week, so they're out with the fairies and it's real Game of Thrones. It's game on, Game of Thrones, and it's this process of, you know, your idealized process of the student saying, hang on, I don't understand this person. I know this is stupid, all ideas here, let's discuss it. This sort of blurring of it and pulling back apart ideas. That's all very good, but really, majority of the time, it's people are paid not necessarily a large amount of money. A lot of people are deceived. There's a lot of deception to get PhD students to slave away for low amounts of money. There's a lot of distraction going on, and it's very much a Game of Thrones scenario. In fact, and what I want to say about it is not only is it a Game of Thrones scenario, if you have a process of the non-open forum where the person comes up, it behoves really the person to be more critical and to actually find out something arbitrary wrong about it, because there is indeed a mathematics that the more critical you are, the more negative you are, the end result of being negative is promotion. People eventually have to buy you off. If you're positive, you're giving away positive energy for free. If you're negative, you are putting a price on your valuation. I don't know quite how to describe it. So, that being said, really there's a big yawning gap between academia, which can produce excellent stuff in the right conditions when everything's lined up on a good day, and then this broad sweep. So you've got these two ranges for which coming in, and then you've got the situation. It's sort of like this crime scene. You're going in trying to work out what's going on, and the thing's a bit dysfunctional, but you don't see that as a key dysfunctional thing. You see you've got this big book, and the book is, people pay money for that book. That book is taking up resources, pages, thickness, and of course people in the quote unquote efficiency will say, I don't like this book, and throw it away into the recycling. And that's a huge waste of energy. And what you're looking at is you say, well, this person has got all this beautiful skill. They can't for the life of them explain the fundamental, start breaking up the fundamentals of solar physics, the fact that the Earth's tilting and all that angular momentum stuff, and the orbital stuff, the elliptical orbit, and the interplay between it all, and all that type of stuff going on. Now, yes, so that this is not there. So, I suppose the real understanding is that one can understand two things. One can understand that how someone can research for years and years and no one actually sitting down ever and explaining how things go on. And when you really come to look at it, no one has. And that's what I want to do in this next episode when I come along, to try and explain what's going on. No one has. Then again, you'd think, well, if it's not out there, surely a simple explanation would evolve in academia. Well, indeed, people are not revising anything or simplifying explanations. People are always at the forefront. The news bulletin is a new cure for cancers, a new this. It's actually not newsworthy to say, well, these are the aspects of orbital mechanics. Whoa, there's suddenly a car. There's a sort of building car in there. This lane I want to be in, but it's all okay. Yeah, so there is a historical reason, a precedent, for why you wind up giving a fairly simple explanation of things, and it's almost so there's a slash and burn culture in New Guinea, which is the up to the north of Australia. So if you're Australian, you know exactly what New Guinea is. But what will happen is they'll go into an area of rainforest, they'll slash all the trees down, and then they'll burn the whole lot of them, and then they'll grow some yams for a while, and then the water will erode, the soil will go down, it'll be crap, and then they'll say, well, this is no good, I'll go and slash and burn the next section. That's essentially what academics do, in that they have an explanation, and it's far easier to, it's far more valuable to find something new, a bit more edgy, than to actually go in and actually fix what you've slashed and burned. So we have explanations, and it's there. And it's a real symptom that you have these people moping around the place, and he's very insightful about different cultures that worship the sun and believe these funny beliefs. But he hasn't got this perspective to see that we are living in a society where the actual fundamental beliefs and fundamental understandings aren't penetrating. But what is penetrating is the ability. People may not know how the sun works, but they definitely know how to put other people down. They know how to limit people's power to ensure their power. They're mostly interested in getting the best feed and the best opportunities for themselves. And to do that, they've got to be focused on who knows what, how much, how relevant, what's in it for me. And so therefore, these simple explanations don't go there. So what I'm going to do is, on my journey back, I don't believe I'd be speaking for so long, I'm going to give a explanation of the historiography of circle orbits, elliptical orbits, any orbits, go across there. A bit of historiography about Aristotle, Newton, Einstein and Higgs, all getting more into it, and a sort of a background of people using different levels of explanations for different things. And then get into Kepler's laws. So Kepler's laws are basic certain things. Now, if you think you have a law made out of after you, well, it sounds great in our society. Something being a law is great, it's official. But in science, a law is a bit sort of like... a law is a set of predictable observations. So I observe it once, I observe it twice. It seems to happen all the time. I don't know why, but this happens. So the law of gravity, what goes up must come down, is the law of gravity. It really is sort of a bit of an embarrassment saying, oh, look, this is the way it is. But to the uninitiative, a law, Kirchhoff's law or Kepler's law. We're going to do Kepler's three laws, which are basically is Newton's laws of motion. It's another example that people in a society which is the very declarative, I declare that today is Monday, and how I can prove it it's Monday is I can just laugh longer and harder at any other person who disagrees with me. And essentially, that's how you make a day. Monday, you get a large enough population laughing at you if you say it's Tuesday when everyone knows it's Monday. It's a declarative knowledge. And so, indeed, in this mix, we've got people who are quite satisfied to leave the understanding at the declared understanding. Okay, well, I'll stop this and go ahead. And when we go in, so in this episode, we've just talked purely at a very, very high level about what this chap's doing, the fact that he's missed some basic science, so it makes the book, you know, just a heavy tome of, it's sort of like rich, oh, can I say, it's like you go out to dinner and you get, you know, this, it's the finest ingredients. It's really fine, detailed, I don't know, breadcrumbs. Here's some sauce. Here's some batter. Here's your veal. It's not been mixed together, but it's really high quality stuff. In fact, it's everything you know, but it's not been put together. So that's what I've said so far. And it's a real sort of eye-opener as to what's going on. Now, the vast majority of people have a very prosaic feeling of knowledge. You know, we've got to the moon. Hang on, that means that we're great. When I'm saying that we have achieved a certain level in technology, but we're not necessarily, the average person's not necessarily all that more skilled and more aware of going on. And so in my next episode, I will give you the basis of the basic skills and bear in mind that I'm going to go for the jugular vein and actually try and give you a sense of knowledge perspective, pull you back, and then move across from Kepler and give you some of the orbital ideas. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.